All right. I decided to drop back in just to check on how things were when I'm gone. Not really. I told you that I was going to have a short meeting. It was a Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday meeting at Midway near Trenton. So we finished that meeting and drove back last night. Sandra's not feeling well tonight. That's why she's not here. So I guess I took her up there and wore her out. But we had a very good meeting, a very good visit. Those were wonderful people. We just enjoyed it so much and got to see Denise's daddy and mother. They came three times, Sunday night, Monday night, and Tuesday night. A lot of other people up there. We just saw a whole lot of people up in that area. So I enjoyed that very much. All right, as we study tonight, what I would like to do with you is take the period of the Exodus, and I want to go over those details some more. Those are a whole lot less familiar. And so I'd like to go over the details of the Exodus tonight. So if you want to open your Bibles there to the book of Exodus, that would be a good thing. So just I want you to look at it, feel free to look at it, and have it there before you so that you can see what's going on. All right? Now, in the last study that I had with you, I was going over the scriptures, and we haven't completed that yet. We've yet got more of that to do. But I told you about the scriptures that tell about the period of the Exodus. Now, I want to see, do you remember the scriptures that make up the period of the Exodus, that tell about that period? So what are the scriptures that tell about the period of the Exodus? The book of Exodus, the book of Leviticus, and the first 13 chapters of Numbers 1 through 13. That's right. So now we're going to look in the book of Exodus, and we'll start and notice it has 40 chapters. You start in chapter 1. All right, now the thing to do in remembering these passages is to recall that the story of Joseph is the story that helps us get Israel down into Egypt, right? See, we make that connection. All right, here the children of Israel are in Egypt. And when they are in Egypt at first, while Joseph is still alive, do you remember how Pharaoh welcomed them with open arms? You remember that? Everything in Egypt is theirs. And you can live wherever you want to, you know, all that. And so Joseph arranged for them to live in the eastern part of the delta, which is the land of Goshen. Well, as the years go by, now look in there in chapter 1 of the book of Exodus, and see if you can find any reference where it says there arose a new Pharaoh that knew not Joseph. All right? All right? So here's a new Pharaoh, knows not Joseph. Enough time has gone by that even though the name of Joseph might be recalled, they don't feel any personal debt to him now. And the people, the Israelites, have grown to be a much more numerous people. So this Pharaoh sets out to control the people. So when you think about this, look at the three measures that he takes, and all three of these are in that first chapter. And we won't dwell on any of these, but we will just look at them quickly. So in that first chapter, what he's going to do is he's going to try to control the Israelites. So the first thing he does is... How about that? So the first thing he does is what? Can you tell there? Huh? Yes, in other words, he makes them what? All right, see, he makes them slaves, and so... Look, he puts them under rigorous toil. Maybe that will keep them from multiplying. Did it? No. Number two, what does he do? All right, and whom does he tell to do this? All right, these midwives, when they go to help a Hebrew woman have a baby, if it's a boy, they're to kill it, and they won't do it. They don't do it, and God blesses them because they won't cooperate. So the third thing he tells them to do is what? What is the third measure? You look in your Bible there. It's still in chapter 1. Who's to do that? It's, yeah, just the people of the land, the Egyptians. So they are, we'll just kill the babies. The Egyptians are to kill the babies. Okay, so chapter 1. Now we're not going to look at every chapter in this detail. Chapter 1 starts out like that. Now chapter 2, what's the event you see at the beginning of chapter 2? All right, here's the birth of Moses. The birth of Moses. Now while you're looking, look at the end of chapter 2. Look at the end of chapter 2. Remembering that it begins with the birth of Moses, now what does chapter 2 end with? Okay, chapter, all right, that's what he's named. What's the end of chapter 2 telling about? Right. Now, has Moses left the land? He's left the land. So I want you to observe that with regard to Moses, we have his birth. We have him growing up to be 40 years old, going out to help his brethren. And you can see that area there in chapter 2. You know, he kills the Egyptian to defend his brother. Remember that? And then they won't accept, the other Hebrews won't accept his help. And he finds out that the word is getting out. So he flees out into the wilderness, lives out there another 40 years. So do you realize then that chapter 2 covers Moses' life? The first two-thirds of his life is told in Exodus 2. See that? All right, so in Exodus 3, look at that chapter right quick and tell me what's the famous story that you see in it. That's the burning bush. All right, now in the burning bush, you've got chapter 3 and chapter 4. And you've got four questions that Moses asked. Now, at this time, I don't want you to think that I'm wanting you to memorize everything I'm telling you. I'm not doing that tonight. Now, eventually, I want us to learn it. But again, what we're doing is just familiarizing you. That's all I'm wanting to do, is to familiarize you with what is in this, so that we're going to keep on at it until we're very familiar with all of this. So the first excuse when God tells him that I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and so on, and I've heard the cry of my people, and I'm sending you. First thing Moses says is, who am I? Who am I? Now then the second question is, who are you? Now I've simplified that a little bit, but do you see how that's an easy way to remember? So he starts out with, who am I? Meaning, who am I that I could do such a thing as this? The Lord says, I'll be with you. And then he says, well, who are you? What God shall I say sent me? And then, I'm not an eloquent man. And God asks him, who made the mouth? Who made the tongue? And then he says, well, now they won't believe me. They won't believe me. And so God gives him the signs to show, you know. All right, so you've got 3 and 4 focused around the story of the burning bush and the commission of God to send Moses back to Egypt. Now, does that sort of tie those first four chapters together? See, you have the bondage of Israel and the situation that they're in. They're in slavery. They're in a bad situation. All right, Moses is born. And all of the story about his being found in the ark of the bulrushes and or the reeds and everything. And then he grows up and he goes out and he kills the Egyptian. And then he flees out in the wilderness. And now the burning bush, and he's sent back. And so in chapter 5, he comes before Pharaoh. And what does he say to Pharaoh? What message does he deliver? Let my people go. And what does Pharaoh answer? Who is the Lord that I should obey him? I don't know who the Lord is, and I won't do what he says. You know, I mean, right there, he's just flung the gauntlet, didn't he? He just flung the gauntlet. And as I love the way my friend Leon Malden puts it, Moses signed him up for a 10-lesson course. in who the Lord is. So, as a matter of fact, the request, the request of God to let His people go, what does that? It has kind of the opposite effect, doesn't it? At first, what does Pharaoh do to the people? Makes them work harder in it. In that, what do they now have to do in addition to making the brick? What do they have to do? That's right. Have to gather the straw. So as they come in that first day, when they've been beaten and everything, they come by Moses and Aaron, and it's like, you know, at first they were, oh, we're so tickled you're here. We're so glad we're going to get out. And now they say, well, thanks a lot. Boy, you've made us to stink in the eyes of Pharaoh. And I've always laughed at that expression, you know, to stink in the eyes of Pharaoh. You get it? So that's kind of funny to me. But that's what the language is. That's what it says. To stink in the eyes of Pharaoh. Well, then Moses says, God, what's happening? What's happening? Look in chapter 6. What does God remind Moses of there as chapter 6 begins? Look at the verses where God is assuring Moses. What's he telling him? I am the Lord. I told you that Pharaoh would not at first agree, that this wouldn't be easy. But we're going to get this done, but there's a lot of discouragement here. And we see some of the lineage of Moses, his family in the background and all that. But now look in chapter 7 at what begins there. What begins in chapter 7? The plagues begin in chapter 7. So you have water to blood. Now then, scan along in your text and find the next plague. The water to blood, and then what? Frogs, lice, flies. The murrain. I don't know where anybody ever came up with murrain from, but it was a plague or disease. And then what? Boils, hail, locusts, thick darkness, death of the firstborn. Now when you get to that last one there, look in chapter 11. Look in chapter 11 and see what is associated with that. And look in 11 and 12. What is associated? What is going to be associated with the death of the firstborn? The Passover. And part of the directions for the Passover is that when they kill the lamb, they dip the hyssop in the blood. And where do they put that? Where do they put that blood? Now the doorpost, that's here, and the lintel. Okay? So that's where they put the blood. The Lord passes over, and He spares the firstborn of the Israelites who had that blood on the doorpost and lintel. But the firstborn males, and that's who it was the males. The firstborn males of man and beast were killed. And when that plague happened, then Pharaoh told them, what did he tell them? Get out. Go. Take everything. Go. Get out of here. Look in 13. 13 tells you a little bit about, it emphasizes some things about the firstborn, doesn't it? See anything in chapter 13 about the firstborn and the significance of the firstborn? What's that? Consecrate to me. In other words, they are to be mine. Why? Because I'm sparing them. I'm sparing them because of the blood you've put on the doorposts and the lintels. I'm sparing them at a time that I'm wiping out the firstborn males of all Egypt. So since I'm sparing them, they're to belong to me. And so there's a good bit of the law based on that idea. There were sacrifices that were to be offered. There was a tax, you might say, to be paid for each male that was born. If it was an unclean animal, so that it could not be sacrificed, then its neck was to be broken, so that, in other words, it was to be killed. It was not to be of value, and not to be kept for value of the one who was offering that. The firstborn male was to be offered to God. Now, in the case of the children of Israel, you know, it's a real interesting thing, because if you'll think about it a minute, the tax that God, it's a half shekel, the tax that he ordered paid, you could do that as the children would be born, but what about the Israelites that were already firstborns? Well, later on in the book of Numbers, you will find out that what God said was, count all the Levites. I'm taking all the Levites to be instead of the firstborn of Israel. So all of the firstborn that were already there, that were already alive, that's what God did. He substituted the Levites for them. But after that, when someone was born into Israel as a male, then there was a tax to be paid for him because he belonged to God. And if it was a clean animal, it was to be sacrificed to God. So this firstborn thing, see, it was a big thing. And it was the basis of a lot of the law. Well, look in 14 now. What did they do in 14? Crossing of the Red Sea. In 15, what did they do? What about that song? Is there a song there at first? The song of Moses and Israel. Now you remember in Revelation the song of Moses and the Lamb. Well, see, this is just the song of Moses because Christ hasn't come along yet. But do you see, why were they singing this song? Because they had just what? They had just been delivered. They had just crossed the Red Sea. They had just been delivered. And it was a song of triumph and thanksgiving. Now that means that this song, the idea of this song, therefore forms the basis of that song over in Revelation, which is the song of Moses and the Lamb, tying it with that early song. Okay? So in 15, they also come to what place? What's that first place they come to where the bitter water is? All right, that's Marah, M-A-R-A-H, and the word means bitter. And when Naomi, remember who Naomi was? Ruth and Naomi, remember that? When Naomi means pleasant, Naomi means pleasant. And when Naomi returned home, everybody said, hey, look, it's Naomi again. It's pleasant. Pleasant has come back. She said, oh, no, don't call me pleasant. Call me Mara. You know why? Because she had lost her husband and had lost both of her sons. So it wasn't that she herself was bitter, but the idea was that life had been bitter. So there's that bitter idea. Well, what's the next place they come to? At the close, I think it's at the close of 15. They come to Elam. And I saw a picture of that today. And today it covers about 3 miles, an oasis. And it was a big enough oasis that the Israelites could have enough water for themselves and for their herds and flocks. I mean, they had enough water for everybody. And that was Elam. All right, now in 16, they come to what? The wilderness of what? Now look at what they're complaining about there in the wilderness of sin. They don't have food. They don't have bread. And so what does God send them here beginning in the wilderness of sin in chapter 16? This is where the manna begins. This is where the manna begins. And remember that sin in this connection has nothing to do with the English word sin. It's just a place name that happens to be the same as the word for transgression, sin. But that it has nothing to do with that. So it's like part of the word of Sinai, S-I-N-A-I. So all it is a place name. Now in the 17th chapter, they're having a problem with what? Water. So what does God cause to happen in chapter 17? Water comes forth from the rock. Look in verse 7. What does he name the place? Massa and Meribah. Now look in your footnote, and what does Massa mean? Testing, proving. What does Meribah mean? Quarreling, contention, fussing, strife. Two ideas. So in 17, they also do battle with whom? The Amalekites. And this is when the Amalekites lay up for themselves a judgment that God says, the day will come I will blot out the memory of Amalek from the face of the earth. And that will happen in the days of Saul, the king of Israel, in 1 Samuel 15, that story you all have heard about Saul told to go kill all the Amalekites, and he didn't kill all the Amalekites. He brought back the king. Do you all remember hearing that story? Well, that's the end of this story. Okay? Now I've got 1 Samuel 15 in my mind. All right, we go back now in Exodus. We go back to Exodus 18. And in Exodus 18, who comes and joins Moses? All right. Yeah, Jethro brings Moses' wife and his sons and so on. And that's also where Jethro observes Moses for a while. And Moses is... it's like a line of everybody in Israel standing out there waiting to come to Moses. Big problems, every little thing, every big thing, they're all coming to Moses. So after Jethro watches for a while, he says to Moses, you know, you're just going to wear yourself completely out this way. This is not any way to do it. What you need to do is to appoint men who will be able to deal with the more insignificant things, and then let the more significant things come before you so that you won't have to deal with every little thing that comes along. Well, that was pleasing in the sight of God, and it was certainly pleasing to Moses. He thought that was a good idea. So they did that. And in 19, what happens? Where do they come in 19? All right, here they are at Mount Sinai. And you can look in verses like 3, 4, 5, 6, right along in there. That's where God offers them the covenant. You all see that? That's where He offers them the covenant. Now, I'll tell you what let's do. Steve Melton, would you read Exodus 19, 3 through 6? Now, let me just say, read verse 5 again.
Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine.
All right, now, what you need to do as a Bible student is you need to memorize that. You need to underline that. You need to make that a very special passage because so much of the rest of the Bible is based on that. And you take in Jeremiah 7, you take in Jeremiah 11, the prophet Jeremiah. God is speaking through the prophet Jeremiah, and God is saying, when I brought you out of Egypt, did I tell you that the deal was that if you would offer me lots of burnt offerings and sacrifices, then you'd be my people? Well, you know, Steve, when you read that verse, does that verse say, now therefore, if you will offer lots and lots of burnt offerings and sacrifices to me, then you will be my special people from all the earth? See, that's not it. The point was that if you will devote yourselves to me to walk in my ways, God was not there saying you're going to have to be absolutely sinlessly perfect. That was not the emphasis. That's not what God was telling them. What God was telling them was that you're to live life my way. Sure, you're going to make some mistakes. What did God provide for that? Sacrifices. But the point was that they were to walk in his ways. Now, you know what they did? What they did was to turn it around so that the sacrifices were the way of life. In other words, that's what you do, and then live any way you want to. That's not the way it was. Do you see? Does everybody see that? So this passage where God is explaining to Israel what he wants them to do and what the deal is going to be, it just sets the basis for a great deal of the rest of the Bible.
In this version it says, a special treasure.
Right.
I think it really brings it out.
Yeah, it does. A special treasure. That's right. Though all the earth is mine, you're going to be a special treasure. Look now in the next few verses at what Israel did when Moses went back down and told them Israel say. That's right. All the Lord has spoken, we will do. All right. So as chapter 20 comes, then 20 begins with what? What's the famous thing there? The Ten Commandments. So God is giving them the commandments. And as you go through 20 and look at 21 and 22 and 23, do you see the nature of what you're reading there? It's commands. It's laws. Do you see that? So this is information God is giving the children of Israel to know how they, if they're to obey him, what are they going to have? Some stuff to obey. So this is where they're being taught moral, ceremonial, in other words, worship. By the way, in chapter 23, Exodus 23, kind of take a look at that. What does 23 deal with? The feast days. Now here is another one of these wonderful little advantages you're going to have. We're going to get two for the price of one. Because there's another 23 that deals especially with the sacrificial days and the special days. Leviticus 23. So see, in your mind, if you can say, okay, Exodus 23 and Leviticus 23, I have me there two whole chapters on the feast. So any time that I need to read or study anything about those three great feasts in the year, I know two chapters where I can go. One is Exodus 23 and the other is Leviticus 23. And one of the things that you need to get straight in your mind, because it will always be a great asset in your Bible study, is that since the first feast that God ordained was the Passover, it was also the first feast of the year. And if you read back there where the feast is being ordained and everything, it's in the first month. The first month. Now, at this point, you don't have to remember all this, but I'm just showing you. And eventually we'll learn it. But right now I'm just showing you the idea here. They call that first month Abib. And later on, they changed the name to Nisan with one S. But this was a name, it was an agricultural name that had to do with the springing up of the grain out of the dirt. It would come up out of the dirt. This is when the first feast was observed, and that was Passover. And then 50 days later, they observed the second one, which was called the Feast of Weeks or the Feast of Pentecost in New Testament days. Because, see, this is Greek. So in the Old Testament, you see, they would never have called it Pentecost. This came about by the time we're in the New Testament with Greek. So they would call it the Feast of Weeks because, see the 50? 7 weeks and the day after. And so that was Pentecost. And then in the fall, sometime in late September or early October, you would have the Day of Atonement and the Feast of Tabernacles. The Feast of Tabernacles. And so these three feasts were the three great feasts of the year when all the Jewish males were to come to the center, wherever the center was. Later on, it came to be Jerusalem, you know. And so the Passover, the Pentecost, the Tabernacles. The Tabernacles was the one that, it was the last of these three in the year. But it only occurred approximately 6 months after. Because it occurred about October or so. So at this point, what I want you to do is remember the three feasts in their order. And Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. Everybody got that? Well, we'll go over it again sometime, and we'll talk about this. And one time, when we actually begin the next quarter, and we begin going through this, it's probably the quarter after that. Then I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to show you the calendar, and you won't have to learn all the calendar, but certain parts of the calendar we'll learn, because that will always be a real big benefit to you, like in figuring out when was the day of Pentecost. About what time of the year would that have been? Turned out to be around May the 20th. But I'm going to give you that information, because then you'd be able to just figure it out. And that's always better. Alright, so in chapter 24 in Exodus there, they are making a covenant. God makes a covenant with them. This is when the covenant is actually formalized between God and Israel. Now then, look on in chapters 25 through 30. Look in chapters 25 through 30 and just look at the kind of thing that's being discussed there. What do you see there? Instructions on building the furniture and the tabernacle and all of that and the priest's garments. Right? See that? All right, now in 31, there's a very important little chapter, because what is 31 about? The craftsmen. Bezalel and Aholiab are going to be the two overseer craftsmen who are going to direct and do the work and direct those who help them and everything like that. Now then, in 32, 33, and 34, what do you have? 32, what is that? That's right, the golden calf. So in 32, 33, and 34, we have the sin of the golden calf and the aftermath, the dealing with it, what all had to be done. And then in 35 through 40, look at what you've got. The building of the tabernacle and the furniture and the priest's garments and everything. And then in chapter 40 itself, look at what you've got. It's erected. The tabernacle is set up and it's all ready to go. Only thing they need now is to have some priests. And so that's going to have to be done also. And that will be done, and the record of that is done at the beginning of or in the book of Leviticus. All right, so as you think about the book of Exodus now, you know, we've been saying before that the events that go in the period of the Exodus, here in the book of Exodus, the events are the slavery of Israel, the birth and early life of Moses, God sends him back to Egypt, the plagues, and then the crossing of the Red Sea, and then they're traveling down to Mount Sinai. See? You realize that we were leaving out some things. And so they made their way down to Mount Sinai. You have the waters of Marah. You have the oasis at Elim. You have the wilderness of Sin with the manna. You've got the rock at Rephidim where the water comes out. The battle with the Amalekites. You have Moses' family joins him. And then you have them at Mount Sinai. They get the Ten Commandments. The law is given. The covenant is made. The law is given. They build the tabernacle and they ordain the priesthood. And so at the end of Exodus, we have the tabernacle set up. That's the book of Exodus. At the end of the book of Exodus, the tabernacle is set up. Now, when you go into the next book, check it out. Leviticus. Okay, Carl?
Quick question. Chapter 19, verse 1 says, in the third month after something, they're going out when the first day of the third month, they were at Sinai. So
right.
They were camped at Sinai for 10 months.
Yeah, that's right. It was about 11 months because they actually observed a Passover in the second month before they left. They observed the Passover in the second month before they left. They observed the, in fact, you know, that's an interesting thing, Carl, because remember the first Passover was the one in Egypt. All right, then they celebrated the Passover exactly a year later, and that was the first month. But then they also, like I said, they celebrated a second month Passover for those that were indisposed the first month. So that would make it about 11. But you know what that does say is that the trip they took, a lot of times we say 3 months. No, it took them 2 months, didn't it? Because they got there on the first day of the third month. See? So, but that's good. That's good. Now look in Leviticus. Now the first 7 chapters. What is that all about? Different offerings. And when you're studying those offerings, when we're studying those offerings, we will not study them to be able to go out and offer them ourselves. But we will study them from the standpoint of the significance of those different sacrifices, because that has a spiritual application, like the combination of those sacrifices when they were offered together. So there are a lot of really good spiritual principles taught in those things. And then look in Leviticus 8. In Leviticus 8, what does Leviticus 8 deal with? The consecration of the priests. Okay, Does it tell you any information there at the beginning of 8 about what day it was or what time it was? See if you find anything on that. All right, let's look at it this way. Before you can have a tabernacle with the sacrifices being offered and all of that, what are you going to have to have? You're going to have priests. So it would make sense that the consecration of these priests would begin on the day that the tabernacle was set up. But look and see if you can see in chapter 8 how many days this took. Yes, that's right. So that in chapter 8, if you follow the information through, you would find that they were to be consecrated 7 days, but on the 8th day, Aaron was to be consecrated to begin offering public sacrifices. Okay? Okay, that's in chapter 7. 8, all right, chapter 8. So it's verse 33 that mentions the 7. All right, then chapter 8 begins the... I'm sorry. Chapter 9. Yeah, chapter 9 then mentions the what? Yeah, what did you say, Carl? Tell me that again. What was that about on the 8th day?
So chapter 9 says on the
8th day. Yeah, that's right. So, Aaron, well, here's another thing. Notice who has offered the sacrifices for Aaron and his sons before this. It's been Moses. But now, on this 8th day, they've gone through the consecration, and now Aaron is going to begin officiating. And so he does the officiating now. The sacrifices are being offered. It is a great time. This is the beginning of the whole thing. This is the beginning of the sacrifices and all of that. It is a really great time. And Nadab and Abihu get so wrapped up in this, so happy about this, that they forget what they're supposed to be doing. And so what is it that Hophni and Phinehas do? You remember that story? What? They offer the strange fire. Do you all remember that story? Yeah, Nadab and Abihu. Nadab and Abihu. Yeah, that's right. You know, I think that I think I'm about ready to stop tonight. I think that my mind is beginning to get overwhelmed. So I think we'll just stop for tonight if that's okay with you. And but now I think you're doing just great on this information. So I really am proud of you and the way you're doing this.
Was it descendants of Aaron only who were to be the high priest?
And the priests. Even the priests.
And only
right.
Ordinary priests.
Right, right, right. They all had to be of the house of Aaron. Now only the direct descendants of Aaron could be, you know, like the firstborn. Now later on that was not followed scrupulously. But at first, it was to be like when Aaron died, then Eleazar, because Nadab and Abihu were killed. So Eleazar, and then after that, Phinehas, and then after that, we don't really know what the course was after that, but that was supposed to be the way it was, that the firstborn, but the priest generally.
That's the reason why the Roman appointed priest was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was such a travesty. It was, yeah. Yeah, it's like blasphemy.
Yeah.